Welcome back to Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined as always by my co-host and dear friend, Jacob Acquire. And the game last night has me feeling the way Mo Rigg had Jennings feeling at the end of regulation. And the end result aligned with my perfect take from last week. But how we got there definitely threw me for a loop, I guess is the way to say it. 49ers win at home against the Carolina Panthers, 20-9. Jacob, what's your biggest takeaway from what just happened on primetime?
I think you got it backwards. I think you feel like Jennings after what Merrick did to him near the end of regulation. At least that's how
yes,
I feel.
The wording on that was backwards. You are right.
I wanted to do what Merrick did to maybe a couple coaches on the staff, but I think I appreciate you giving me the opening because it was nice to watch Sunday without any stakes, right? So, like, a lot of cool games. The one that comes to mind is Shador Sanders getting his first win. Throwing, like, a 70-yard, quote-unquote, bomb touchdown. That was pretty cool to see. But then Monday rolls around. Obviously, the Panthers game happened, and the beginning of the game was interesting. We allowed our first drive touchdown on defense all year. But then after that, Brock Purdy threw three interceptions in the first half. Just abysmal play from him in the first half outside of that first drive. And from those three interceptions, the Panthers walked away with 3 points. And two of those were on our half of the field. Or you could say on the 49ers half of the field. We had short fields. And from looking at everything that happened in that game, I think I'm finally on maybe your side of the argument to where I don't think Dave Canales can be an effective head coach and play caller at the NFL level. And I think this was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, that I've gotten to this point. I've kind of been the Canales defender out of the two of us in terms of his offensive prowess, if you can even call it that. But just some points I wanted to look at throughout this game. Coming into the season, by the way, he said we wanted to be stubborn about the run. And when Rico Dowdle emerged, I felt like that was a turning point for Canales, the offensive scheme, and his kind of his ideology. Do you know how many times Rico Dowdle rushed the ball yesterday?
Was it six times?
Yep. And Chuba Hubbard rushed it three times. That's a grand total. I know we both took a lot of math classes in college. That's a grand total of 9 rushes by the running backs. Bryce had a few scrambles, but I won't count those. 9 runs. Rico Dowdle was averaging 6 yards per carry, and he touched the ball, I think, once running the ball in the second half. We had 4 goal-to-go scenarios, plays in the first half. None of them were runs. We had a play from the 1.5-yard line, which I think this is probably Bryce Young's worst interception ever. The first interception he threw, where he probably could have ran it in. Tommy Trimble ran the wrong route and it got muddy and Bryce was targeting Mitchell Evans, but there was about 7 defenders in that area. Just a bad decision from him. But when I rewatched the game this morning, I came away thinking, why was play action boot from the gun the play call when we're on the 1-yard line? When we're the running team since we've been in the league. We're the keep pounding team. And why not try to run the ball on first or second down? Maybe it's because he was back on the West Coast and wanted to give his old team, the Seahawks, a nod and decided to throw from the 1-yard line instead of running it. I don't know. But then later again in the game, we're presented with a 2-point conversion attempt on the 1-yard line because there was a leveraging penalty. And the play call from the 1-yard line was, again, a pass play from the shotgun. If that's your best 2-point conversion call, it doesn't matter if you're on the 1 or the 2-yard line, if you're going to pass it. So why not just run it in or take the points? Because Ryan, our kicker, he made the extra point. Why not just take that? Canales failed the down 8 test. There were very few just pure dropbacks from shotgun without some sort of roll or boot. And one of the only ones that we had where Bryce wasn't blitzed was a deep touchdown to Tetero McMillan. I just do not understand what the game plan was. To be quite frank, I don't think Dave Canales understood what the game plan was. And in the post-game presser, when he was asked We only had 9 designed runs with our running backs. What was the game plan there? He said, well, we wanted to build off of what happened last week in the passing game. You can still do that while also taking what the defense gives you. Prior to this game, you know where San Francisco ranked in rush defense in terms of yards allowed? Just
rushing. Was it 28th, 27th?
They were 29th. Okay. So that's the fourth worst. They allowed the fourth most rush yards per game. And I believe our running backs combined, the 9 touches combined for just under 50 yards. So I'm going to pose the question to you. It's the only thing I wrote down in the notes in our Google Doc prior to this, because I have like my own notes. You have your own notes. What is the offensive identity of the Panthers? And does Dave Canales even know what that identity is now that we are 13 weeks into the season?
The offense identity, I think there was a lot of buzz around kind of Rico's emergence and just kind of making him the centerpiece of the offense. And watching the drive that led up to the first goal line incident that you kind of brought up, J.C. Horn is who sets us up. I think the first interception was much more of an athletic feat. And I think I wouldn't put it so much on Purdy. Yes, the ball was a little bit behind, but Horn just jumps at the ball, undercuts the route, brings it inside the 20. And the very first play that they roll out, and if you go back and you watch the film, it's a designed rollout, very similar to what you see on the goal line. And so he rolls out, and you know what Bryce does on the play?
Was that a scramble on the first one?
He scrambles on the first one. And then again, the play right before he throws the interception, they do kind of another semi rollout when he's in shotgun. It's like a fake handoff to the running back, like up the gut, and he rolls out and he scrambles for about like 5 to 6 yards, puts us on the 1 yard line. And you're going, okay, all these designed rollouts, you're trying to get the defense moving. Now just plunge it forward. You're on the 1 yard line. You got 4 downs to pick up literally 3.5, like what, 4 feet?
Yeah. Like 4 feet.
Yeah, it's
what Cam Newton used to reach out, like that distance.
And so, and I get you can't necessarily do a quarterback sneak with Bryce Young, but there are some creative things that you can do from a blocking standpoint to give Rico just a little bit of a gap to squeeze in for the score. And we've seen him do it all year. So that blew my mind that it was very much like just copy and paste of what we were doing that entire drive. Like the whole linebackers staying, they didn't bite. They were staying back waiting for the pass on the goal line because I'm guessing however we lined up, they're like, oh, they're running it again. And so that level of predictability when you get there. And then later on the game, like you're saying, you get the penalty. You have this down 8 opportunity on the 1 yard line. Maybe you didn't feel comfortable with your play call sheet from the 2 yard line. And again, you decide not to run it or put it in like Rico or Chuba's hands. And
Rico wasn't on the field for that play, by the way. It was Chuba and Jimmy Horn were lined up in the backfield.
Oh, that's okay. So yeah, the two backs for that play. And it's just, it's frustrating. It is. And so I get what your question is like, what is the offense identity? And like in this game, it seemed like the goal was to have like more empty or shotgun looks on design dropbacks when they were down in kind of like non-neutral situations. And then in the neutral situations, it was they gave a couple handoffs on early downs. And then other than that, it was these design bootlegs and just weird looking plays that kind of cut the field in half. And it doesn't seem like that is anywhere near building on what we did at Atlanta last year. I felt like the whole game plan in Atlanta was a reaction to them wanting to stop the run. A lot of these plays that we talk about with the 49ers, I did not see stacked boxes or just these guys all on the line where it's like, I don't know if I want to run. Like they have like everything accounted for here. I felt like we could have grabbed a huge opportunity leaning into that. And then when we did at the beginning of the second half with Rico Dowdle, he breaks a big one. And then we go away from that the rest of the game. And it's just, it's frustrating to watch. And maybe Canales isn't the answer. And maybe it goes back to your point that you were alluding to, that it's like he can be a head coach, but he's got to find an offensive play caller. Like he cannot be the guy calling plays. If he's the guy you want as your CEO, the motivator in the building, making sure everybody's on the same page. But there's a lot of film analysts that have been putting out over the past like 24 hours, like a lot of glimpses of how there is a lot of sloppy play on the field. And you just wonder, you're almost 2 years into this, even though like you look back at like Ron Rivera and Cam Newton, their early struggles, a lot of times they were heating up November, December. There weren't a lot of issues you'd see turning on the tape of going, oh, we got more miscues. Like, we got to clean this up. Like, guys aren't running the right route. Like, that's stuff that should have happened in September, October, and like been cleaned up already. And so the fact that that keeps like bleeding into the year, I think makes last night that much more frustrating.
Aside from the scheme, the play calling, which I'll circle back to after this, I want to talk about the defense first. I have literally zero complaints about the defensive side of the ball. I often complain about the defense, about how Coach Evero schemes it up, considering what he had to start the game and to finish the game, because J.C. Horn was out. Corey Thornton, J.C. Horn's backup, left the game. Claudin Cherlis, who was our third linebacker, left the game. And then we had another injury. Chris Barnes, who was a practice squad linebacker, left the game. Considering that and only allowing 10 points in the second half, I think was a phenomenal effort by Ejiro Vero and the defense, not to mention the three interceptions in the first half. But on the offensive side of the ball, it felt like the players just weren't up and ready for this game, which is crazy to me because it's a night game. Like, it's not as if we're the Niners traveling across the country to the East Coast and losing 3 hours. There's a sloppy play. We talked about the Bryce interception where it's funny. That's the one time he didn't scramble on that drive out of the boot, where I think he could have, if he didn't get there, he would have gotten maybe lost 1 yard, but that's better than an interception. But throughout the game, another Tedrow McMillan, just like devastating drop. It was on the, after Mike Jackson's interception, when we were on our side of the field, Bryce, perfect anticipatory throw, hits right in the torso, T-Mac, just, he had clubs for hands or something. He blamed the gloves,
There were so many other targets. But like, this is the thing, like, we look at guys like CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, and I'm not necessarily saying that their mistakes should like justify T-Max, but these are superstars that have drops on regular occurrences, but their big playability is like what makes them so special. And it's like, we could unlock that because Bryce Young and T-Mac couldn't get on the same page multiple times in this game. Like, I get that third down situation coming off the Mike Jackson, but there were multiple other opportunities aside from the one time they did connect on the touchdown where it just seemed like they were not on the same page. Like, Bryce got an intentional grounding call because T-Mac's running a slant or an inbreaker instead of running outside. And it's just you can't.
And the ball got tipped on that one too, which is very weird that they still called that. There's just very weird calls throughout the game, but T-Mac only had two receptions in this game on seven targets. The one was the I think it was a 29-yard touchdown. Then one was like where Bryce fought through like eight sacks and just dumped it off to him, and it was like a 6-yard play. That was T-Mac's big gaffe, if you want to say that. But then throughout the game, Jatavion Sanders, I think this was his worst game of the season, and he's had a lot of stinkers so far. He had the one catch where he just went backwards on Chuba Hubbard's swing pass following the third interception. If Sanders just blocks the guy, Hubbard walks in, but instead Sanders cuts past the free runner up the field. Like, did he think Chuba was going to throw him the ball? Like, it was a trick play or something? I didn't understand that one. There are other instances in which he didn't block. Xavier Leggett, for all the good stuff he had been doing the past, we'll call it a month or so, double clutching a lot of catches. And then I don't know how he consistently does this. He stepped out on a crucial, it was a second down and 10. It was like a 20-yard gain. It was a crucial play, and he stepped out and was called for illegal touching. I don't know how you don't have the spatial awareness this far into year two of your career. So when you combine the Bryce interception, you combine all those receivers I just talked about not hitting their assignments. I thought the O-line was fine. I didn't think they were great, but I thought they were fine. And then you combine that with just the confusing play calling, where it seemed like the play action boot or just the rollout was the featured play of this game. Hasn't been the entire season, by the way. In a game where we could have grounded and pounded our way to potentially a win, considering how they were playing in the first half, it's just bizarre to me. And then, like I said, the one time they went back to what they did last week, 29-yard touchdown to McMillan, who, to his credit, sauced up the, I think it was Renardo Green, the corner, who was guarding him on that play. So I really just, rewatching it, I just walk away confused about this game. And it's even worse because next week, I'm not going to get into the Rams yet, but we're playing the Rams on a short week without a lot of key defenders. And Trayvon Merrick got suspended like maybe an hour before we started recording for that. We'll call it a below the belt punch to Juwan Jennings. So I really don't know what to make about this offense. And I don't think that Brad Idzik, who's our offensive coordinator, just giving him the play calling duties right now is going to fix anything, considering he's never done it before. But I think going forward to next season, number one, I think Canales should be retained as head coach. I think even being 6-6 at this point with the significant talent deficit, I still think is a hallmark for him this far. But somebody else has to call the plays, because if he's going to be the head coach, like you're saying, he's just spread too thin, right? If you looked at him in his press, I don't know if you saw it, he had like significant bags under his eyes from how tiring the game was, I'm assuming. So I don't know.
For me with this team and like the element of play calling, it's like, obviously it's not working out in terms of just knowing what levers to pull. And I think it's just hard because there's a lot of inconsistent play from the players. I mean, you brought up the instances of, like, obviously the T-Mac drop, JT Sanders, just mental blunders, some of the holding calls. And then it's hard with Bryce Young because it's the scattershot and the poor decision-making, especially early on in the game. You got to stop with these early interceptions. Like, and it's some of it's because he's not putting enough zip on the ball because he's a smaller guy. Some of it's he's not seeing the field, and it's just – some of that eventually has to end. And so obviously I don't think this is a discussion about Bryce. We're still very much, I think, in the hunt, so to speak, for the NFC South, especially with Baker's injury. Like, nothing is guaranteed in that department. So you can still go out, maybe put yourself in a position to win the NFC South, which is a huge step. And like you said, I think gives reason to retain Canales. But to use this like talent depletion, that's not how I view the roster at this point. This is one of the most expensive offensive lines. Yes, we're down several dudes. The defensive line is not banged up. A lot of the injuries are on the back end in the secondary, and I don't think we're going to be able to cover the Rams this particular week. But this is a team where you have enough talent on the roster. The defense showed out last night, and you couldn't do anything on offense. And this was a banged up defense. And I think that's just more the demoralizing thing. You had every right to be the one dictating what happened last night on the offensive side of the ball, and you weren't able to. So something's got to change in that department, especially when you have such large investments in your hog mollies up front. Lean on those guys and lean on Rico Dowdle, because I think dropping back and passing in this manner is what leads to some of these errant throws and reveals some of the poor play calling and play designs that have been unfolding.
Yeah. The expensive argument, what I would say is expensive doesn't necessarily equal elite. Like, obviously Robert Hunt is an elite guard, I would say.
And Damian Lewis has been playing like really well.
Playing well, but I think Taylor Moten has taken a noticeable step back. And then on the defensive side of the ball, we do have expensive players, but it's albeit inconsistent, right? For as good as JC Horn has been this season, he has an equal amount of flags as he does interceptions, right? He's still a very good player, but like Turk Wharton is not a top 30 lineman, and he's paid like it, right? So like we did have to pay the bad team tax on a lot of free agents, but I get your point. We aren't like the Titans like we were last year or 2 years ago, like that level of roster. We're approaching having a plus roster, but I agree with you. It's the most disheartening thing to me is while we had our share of injuries on our defense, and I thought our defense actually played incredibly admirably given they had McCaffrey and Kittle to deal with, their defense was equally, if not more, injured in key positions. Nick Bosa out for the year, Mykel Williams out for the year, Fred Warner, who has was pretty clearly the league's best linebacker up to the point of his injury, out for the year. Fred Warner's replacement, Tatum Bethune, who has been playing admirably, he was out in this game. There were opportunities, and we just weren't able to take advantage. Even if they didn't throw three interceptions, let's just say we stopped them on drives. Coming away with 3 points in the first half is just very, very rough, and it's even worse because we were gifted the ball three times. So really don't know what to say about the offensive performance other than the stuff we've already talked about.
Yeah, there's really nothing more to harp on about this. I think I don't know if we're going to be able to quite like pull off Sunday, but like knowing how the Panthers have played, it's like they follow up a disappointing performance with like one of those like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this team was capable of like that kind of game. We could have a one possession game against the Rams, and I'm not saying that's what's going to happen with Los Angeles, but we clearly were able to go in the Green Bay, stir up some stuff. But if I had the lean anyway, this definitely feels like, from a coaching perspective, with how good this team is on both sides of the ball and how they're built for pretty much putting a team in a negative game script, the 49ers aren't a team where I think they can really lean into that plus positive game script. This isn't a really, really good running team in terms of like what they're able to do, where it's like the Rams, I don't know if they necessarily just lean on the run game, but you look at their defensive line and like a negative game script, they would completely get after Bryce if the Rams are able to get out to a 14-21 zip lead against us. And clearly the Panthers have opened that door for several opponents this year. So I think just based on how things look schematically and how that team is built to run, it's just hard for me to see us stopping with all the injuries, the suspensions, guys like Puka Nacua and Davante Adams consistently on a down-to-down basis to where like this even looks like a game. So, and I'm not trying to like lean into my perfect take from like last week, but this definitely does feel like a game where they're going to pour it early and off and on. And it's just like, what do you do as a team to keep up with this? Is this just simply limit possessions and hope your defense comes away with a lucky turnover or two that just kind of limit what the Rams are doing offensively? Like what really is the game plan going into Sunday?
You could lean into the take because your take was correct that San Francisco did win by 10 or more. Maybe if we had converted the 2-point conversion from the 1-yard line, things would be different. But you said the Rams are going to be able to get after Bryce Young. Do you know who has the least amount of sacks in the league? What team?
The Rams have the least amount?
No, not them. What team do you think, or if you know, has the fewest amount of sacks recorded this season?
Well, if you're bringing this up, and I don't think it is the Rams, because that's why I was asking that.
No, it's not the Rams.
Is it the Carolina Panthers?
I think we have the third fewest. It's the 49ers that had the fewest, and they were able to pressure Bryce Young. Granted, there were a lot of blitzes, but Bryce Huff was giving Ike Ekwonu problems. If the worst pass rush in the league was giving our offensive line problems, what do you think the Rams line is going to do? Probably one of the most diverse pass rush attacks, right? So from that perspective, I think we are at a disadvantage. You mentioned turnovers. We also had a fumble where there were two Panthers like right on top of it and didn't recover it. Bizarre to me, but I guess we can only have three interceptions. That's enough luck to last us an entire season, I guess. But then you get to I think the offensive side of the ball is even worse. All of our injured defenders added on top of the players we lost in San Francisco. And we got to go against Matthew Stafford, who you and I discussed beforehand. I think he's the current on-odds favorite to win the MVP. We have to go against him. Puka Nacua, Davante Adams, like you mentioned. I think the Rams are diversifying their run attack recently by adding Blake Corum into the mix, so it's not a stale Kyren Williams show. And they've been getting the tight ends involved recently, too. Colby Parkinson's been a favorite of Stafford's over the past few games. Just getting into this game, I think they're the best team in the NFL, the LA Rams, at this very moment. I don't know where the advantage would be for our team. I know you wrote here that Ejiro Avero was on Sean McVay's staff. He might have familiarity with their scheme. But frankly, I don't think that matters too much when they have the talent, the overwhelming talent advantage in this one.
That note wasn't that Evero knows what McVay is going to do. If anything, it's McVay probably knows what Evero is going to do.
Well, and McVay's evolved his game like every year. And it was 4 or 5 years ago that Evero was on that staff. So it's just interesting.
Well, you go from, I think at the time they were still like, I think that was the transition with like the Goff and Stafford eras. And like with Stafford, the evolution that you're talking about with McVay is like leaning more into like your traditional dropbacks, just using like gap power running schemes. And like that is what the brand has evolved and morphed into for Sean McVay. And I think our defensive line has the ability to shut down their run game on early downs. And I think if you want to lean into that and put them in the pass heavy situations, but I mean, Stafford has just been playing on a level where he knows where to go with the football and has the playmakers to make plays afterwards. So it just, after you've kind of seen how things have played out over the past couple weeks, it doesn't doesn't bode well when multiple starters between J.C. Horn dealing with concussion, Mo Rigg dealing with a suspension, Corey Thornton potentially being out. It's like, if Mike Jackson is arguably your best secondary player come Sunday, that's not a good thing. And if that's the case, I definitely see the Rams probably dropping a 40 burger on us just for, I guess, like laughs, because they can. And then the Panthers, it's just offensively, like, you got to be better than this. Like, this whole just spinning in the mud and not being able to move the ball, even when you're kind of in a garbage time situation, is got to come to an end. Like, you got to find an offensive identity, whether that's just solely leaning into the run game, damned if you do, damned if you must kind of situation, or accessing kind of like throws where Bryce feels comfortable and he has a little bit more vision. And I know he doesn't have the best access to the middle of the field, but maybe some stuff up the seams or things where it's not just check downs and trying to push the ball to the boundaries. And we might have a little bit more success, but who knows?
Yeah, that's the stuff that was working. That's what got T-Mac going 2 weeks ago. That's where he caught the touchdown this week. The second interception, which I think would have been, he was going to get blasted if he caught it. So I don't know if he would have held on, but it would have been a 15-ish yard play like that.
And,
so,
and it was ahead of him. And it was like, it's the visibility across the middle. Well, like when you don't see some of those safeties.
It was online if T-Mac didn't get pulled backwards by the, or not pulled, but like,
yes,
held
his
up.
Arm. Yeah. His arm did get held. Yeah.
Which, again, another iffy no call at that point. But I agree with you. Even if we're down like 40-9 or something, and we have our final drive in the fourth, it doesn't matter if it's Andy or Bryce out there, you got to try to get something going, like lean into the run game at that point, because the Rams will have their backups in and maybe Rico will be fresh or Chuba will be fresh or something, and we can get some yards out of that. Do you want to get into takes territory? Mine's going to be similar to last week. I said CMC would score twice. He only got one of them, so I missed that one. I think Puka is going to get two of them. They've been doing a lot of, we'll call them 1 yard rushes to Davante Adams over the past couple of weeks, where Adams has like 11 touchdowns on the year, and I think 10 of them are within the 5 yard line. It's crazy how good he still is out of his break at, I think he's what, 33 or 34 years old. But I think they're going to make up for it, and Puka's going to get 2 touchdowns this week. I wish it was last week or a couple weeks ago, because in my fantasy, my main fantasy league, I have a bye week clinch in the playoffs, so I don't need anything out of Puka, but I think he is going to score a couple times this week, especially with all of our secondary injuries.
I like the idea of it, but like Puka's usage is so interesting, because it's like he can be such a volume player, like in between the 20s. Mm-hmm. And then it's like you get in the red zone, it's just like Davante Adams. And like,
does all the dirty work, and then it's like, all right, here's your reward, Davante Adams fade.
It's not dirty work, because Puka has gotten his fair share of like red zone opportunities, whether it be handoffs or throws. He's had several down the sideline. So I don't want to say he's not like not in a position to score. It's just to ask 2 touchdowns for a guy, even though Panthers are pretty beat up on that back end. He could have a monster day, but I would lean more into something like he has 10 receptions, like 120 yards before 2 touchdowns. But that's what makes it perfect takes. I like it. For the Rams, I think the take I'm going to lean into is one I had a few weeks ago for the Green Bay Packers. And maybe this is like a knock on wood scenario, but like, I don't see how the Rams don't score 40 plus given the constraints that we've talked about up to this point. And they are a very hot team when you look at how they've played. They just dropped 34 on the Bucs on Sunday Night Football. We're playing on a short week. You go back to the last time they didn't play a top 5 defense in the Seattle Seahawks. They dropped 42 on the San Francisco 49ers that we just played. You start to wonder like, okay, is this just going to be, they're going to override us with their talent and just run up the score? I think they win by 20 plus, and I think they drop a 40 burger. So I think it is a mixture of the two. I don't see how we stay in this game, just because they've built their team to be pretty much like in nickel and dime packages, to where like if they get out to these leads that they're going to be able to play clamps. And that is where you have to be able to limit, I think, in my opinion, early and often the drives and the time of possession that the Rams have, because if they don't have the ball, that's the best case scenario, I think, for your team.
Well, the Niners didn't have the ball much in the first half, and it didn't seem to matter. But you do bring up a good point. I think the outside of the passing attack for the Rams, the hardest thing to beat about them is that they can defend the run in dime packages as if it were a base package. And when you can do that, it makes it very difficult because you're going to be throwing on six DBs that can also fit the run. And that's why Darnold's team, the Seahawks, a couple of weeks ago had a pitfall, threw four interceptions in that game, in large part to their ability to play so many defensive backs. The Emmanuel Forbes turnaround will not be ignored. Chris Shula has turned him into a lockdown number one.
And do you think he's better than Christian Gonzalez, though?
I don't think he's a prototypical corner one like Gonzalez, but over the past few weeks, no one has made more plays on the ball than Emmanuel Forbes, and he's been able to hang with some of the tougher receivers like JSN. Yes, JSN got his numbers, but when he was matched up against Forbes, I think he only allowed two receptions. So he's turned his career around from the rough start in Washington. So I always like a good career turnaround. Speaking of which, the Panthers just signed former 8th overall pick Isaiah Simmons, the linebacker, the guy who Derek Brown was selected over, considering we have so many linebacker injuries, so they had to add somebody. I just think that's a cool full circle moment. I'm going to leave you with this. I asked you at the start what the offensive identity for the team was. If Chuba didn't get hurt, I think that was the Cardinals game, right? And eventually led to Rico Dowdle's breakout few games. How many games do you think we would have won? Or you can answer, like, do you think Dowdle would have even gotten the opportunity if Chuba stayed fully healthy?
I mean, I don't think Rico gets the opportunity if he gets hurt, because I mean, Chuba was the incumbent. Regardless of what was seen in practice or what was said on lines where Rico said, this is the fastest I've ever been in my career, I don't think he was getting more touches. To your point about how many more like wins or losses we would have seen, he was obviously pivotal, like when you look at some of those wins, but it's like, do you think we would have lost some of those games had it been Chuba? And I think in a couple it would have been. So you lose a game or two more, and instead of at like what we're at 6-6 right now, maybe you're looking down the barrel of like 5-7 or 4-8. And I think that feels a lot different than 500. So Rico has definitely been an impact player. I just don't know to what extent you would chalk that up to.
And with that in mind, when I asked you what the offensive identity was, you said, that Rico's emergence kind of became that identity.
Well, we thought it would, and it just hasn't been.
Well, it did for, let's say, the second month of the season, that the Cowboys game, the Miami game, even the Jets game when they were splitting carries, Rico was just so much better. It's like happenstance that we discovered we can lean on a player like this. And that's like, obviously there's coincidences on every team throughout the season, but it's kind of, I feel worse about it being a random thing that we discovered Dowdle could be a centerpiece running back than if it were the plan, because had that injury not happened, like you said, we could be staring at 4-8 and be having much more uncomfortable conversations than the one we just had. I think that's going to do it. It's going to be Thanksgiving week, so I don't know if you'll be back or when we'll be able to do the next pod, because I know you guys are going to be traveling. So
it should be next Tuesday. I will have like work and like a haircut appointment in the afternoon, but you know, I'll squeeze you in some way somehow.
Yeah, you might have to do it on mobile if we can't make it to your setup, but we'll figure it out. Until then, hopefully everybody enjoys their Thanksgiving, Black Friday holiday week/weekend. And you can find us on Twitter, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your content. A very solemn keep pounding this week after what happened yesterday, but hopefully we get a win this week. So keep pounding.